Hello, and welcome to this reading of the Sioux City Journal for Friday, April 12th. I'm your reader, Mark Bedford. We'll start with today's weather. Today will be sunny and pleasant with a high of 65 degrees. Tonight will be clear with a low of 40 degrees. Saturday will be mostly sunny and warmer with a high of 81 degrees. And now we turn to local and state news. Supreme Court weighs reinstating abortion ban. Caleb McCullough reports from Des Moines. Lawyers for Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds argued on Thursday that the state Supreme Court should allow a fetal heartbeat abortion ban to take effect, while opponents fought to keep the measure blocked in court. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments over the law, which a district court blocked last year shortly after Reynolds signed it, following a special legislative session to enact the restriction. The arguments are the latest in a long legal battle over abortion restrictions in the state. The law would ban abortion once cardiac activity can be detected in a fetus, which can be as early as 6 weeks. The justices questioned lawyers for the state and Planned Parenthood on Thursday, largely focusing on which legal standard should be applied to the law. Since Iowa's Supreme Court no longer recognizes a fundamental right to abortion in the state constitution, Iowa Solicitor General Eric Wesson argued the lower-level rational basis standard should be applied and the law should take effect. He argued the undue burden standard imposed by federal law before Roe v. Wade was overturned should no longer apply. This court has never before recognized a quasi-fundamental or a fundamental-ish right, he said. It's a binary choice. A similar law was passed and signed in 2018, but a district court found it unconstitutional under a previous state court decision, which declared a fundamental right to an abortion existed in the state constitution. The Iowa Supreme Court in 2022 reversed that standard, but stated that Iowa was bound by the undue burden standard then imposed by federal precedent that guaranteed a right to an abortion. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade days later, removing that federal standard and overturning the 50-year-old federal right to abortion. Then, in 2023, Reynolds unsuccessfully asked the Iowa Supreme Court to revive the 2018 law. The court did not approve that request, prompting Republican lawmakers to pass a nearly identical law that summer. A district court blocked that law shortly after, saying that it violated the standard set out in the court's 2022 opinion. Peter M., the lawyer for Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers, said the district court was correct in its decision and the law should remain blocked. The law's opponents argued it violates several areas of the state constitution, including due process and a guarantee of equal rights for women. There is no document that says that this court should defer to the legislature when the legislature passes a law that rides roughshod over the rights of Iowans to exercise bodily autonomy, M. said. Planned Parenthood is asking the Supreme Court to send the case back to the district court, where they hope to develop their arguments further. Reynolds, a Republican, said in a statement on Thursday that the overturning of Roe v. Wade gave states the right to decide how to limit abortion. For Iowa, the people's elected representatives have drawn a clear line multiple times at when a heartbeat begins, Reynolds said. Today, the unborn had their day at the Iowa Supreme Court. As a pro-life governor, I will do everything I can to protect the innocent unborn and promote strong, healthy families. Republican Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, who was in the courtroom for oral arguments on Thursday, said in a statement she would continue to defend the state law and she was confident it would be found constitutional. No right is more sacred than the right to life. Today, my office made our case in the Iowa Supreme Court to defend Iowa's heartbeat law, which protects unborn life and prioritizes mother's health, Byrd said. Iowa Senator Janice Wiener, a Democrat from Iowa City, said that the arguments presented by Planned Parenthood were convincing and called the law an unconstitutional attempt to control the bodies of Iowans and their futures. Iowans value their freedom, and that includes the freedom to make decisions about their bodies and their health care with their doctors. A majority of Iowans oppose attacks on their health care choices, Weiner said in a statement. House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, told reporters on Thursday that Republicans are confident in the legislation and hopeful that it will survive the legal challenge. "It was something that we were willing to even come in for a special session. We felt so strongly about it," he said. "So we're obviously hopeful that they would uphold it. But I'm not going to make any predictions on whether they would uphold it or not." In the 2023 decision that upheld the injunction in the 2018 law, Iowa's seven-member Supreme Court was split 3-3 between justices who favored keeping the injunction and those who favored lifting it. Justice Dana Oxley recused herself, but she has not recused herself from the current case. Some justices expressed skepticism about parts of the state's argument on Thursday, but others showed a willingness to uphold the law. Reynolds has appointed 5 of the court's justices, while 2 were appointed by former Republican Governor Terry Branstad. Chief Justice Susan Christensen questioned the rationale of the exceptions allowed under the heartbeat bill, suggesting they may not survive legal scrutiny. The law allows an exception to the restriction for cases of rape that are reported within 45 days and incest that is reported within 140 days, as well as exceptions when the life of the mother is threatened. She said the time limit imposed is too narrow to feasibly allow those cases to be reported. "Isn't that kind of more or less shutting the door on all rapes and incest? Because I think that anyone who's prosecuted or been a part of that world knows that those numbers are very unrealistic for actually being reported," she said. Wesson said the law only requires that the woman seeking an abortion report the rape or incest to her doctor and not to a law enforcement agency, calling the policy not unreasonable. "There is no set date for the court to decide the case, but most cases are decided by the end of the court's term. This year's term ends June 28th. Sioux City Advisory Committee forges ahead as inclusion liaison's suspension continues. Dolly A. Butts reports from Sioux City. The Inclusive Sioux City Advisory Committee is moving forward with its mission in spite of the city's ongoing suspension of its overseeing liaison. On Wednesday, the 11-member committee held its first monthly meeting at City Hall without Semahar Gebrekhidian, the city's community inclusion liaison. According to an internal memo obtained by the Journal, she was suspended with pay effective February 21st, pending the completion of an investigation concerning violations of city work rules. Gebrekhidian, who has been employed with the city since 2021, reports to the city manager's office and is not a department head. "What has happened is so egregious to me as a woman of color. This hasn't happened just one time. This keeps happening," Trisha Rivers, a member of the committee, said Wednesday. "I think harm has been done, and I think we need to move forward and address the harm and work through the harm." Rivers, a Sioux City resident and member of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, commended Gebrekhidian's work with the city, noting she has bridged a lot of communities together. Rivers also called on city leaders to be transparent. "I really don't like the fact that our leadership is going to different people in this community like it's not going to come back to us. We deserve transparency, too. We're a governmental body, too. So please, continuing forward, I urge you to have all stakeholders at future meetings. Let's be transparent. Let's air it all out," she said. City staff and council members have said little publicly about Gebrekhidian's suspension. City Attorney Nicole Dubois said personnel matters are confidential and the city is prohibited from comments. Dubois also denied multiple open records requests concerning Gebrekhidian's suspension, which were made by the Journal under the Freedom of Information Act. Mayor Bob Scott previously said Gebrekhidian has hired an attorney, so the city council doesn't have the privilege or the opportunity to say anything in the public about that. On March 8th, LaShawna Moyle, the committee's chair, and two other members, Sarah Bernson and Erica Carter, met with City Manager Bob Padmore and Councilman Alex Waters, according to a source familiar with the meeting. Padmore and Waters are non-voting members of the committee. Padmore is also serving as the committee's city staff contact until further notice. A recording of that closed-door meeting, which is just over an hour in length, was obtained by the Journal. Since Iowa requires one-party consent, one person can legally record a conversation without telling the other person. When asked by a committee member if there is an end date to Cabrekadon's suspension, Padmore said on the recording, "Right now, we don't know." He said the city has had suspensions that have lasted a couple of days to 6 months. She's not being punished for anything right now. She's being investigated for some things that have happened, Padmore said. I'm frustrated that it's 5 weeks in and I can't tell you when it's going to end. I'm hoping sooner than later. On the recording, Moyle expressed frustration with division that has been created within the committee. She also said she was concerned for her safety due to negative, condescending messaging from individuals. Padmore stressed the inclusive Sioux City movement is very important to the city. People are watching what we're doing. I think the best thing that we can do is show that inclusive Sioux City as a committee and as a movement in our community is alive and well and moving forward, he said. On the recording, Waters said he doesn't think the city does a good enough job of reflecting the community within City Hall's walls and expressed disappointment about being unable to defend himself against negative comments made at a March 18th council meeting. During the council meeting, several individuals, including Rivers, committee member Jim Jung, and Gebrekadon's husband, Logan Arguello, spoke in support of Gebrekadon. Arguello said his wife has been put in uncomfortable and even dangerous situations while on the job. He specifically called out Waters and Councilman Matthew O'Kane for bringing up Gebrekadon's performance during city budget sessions. I don't know if you all watched the council meeting when they came and spoke, but it's like I can't tell you how hard it is to sit there when you've fought for something or you've worked hard for something for a long time. And then, like you can't speak and there's bashing, Waters said on the recording. That's hard for a lot of us council members to listen to, and especially when we already feel pressure that it's like, you know, we all know the demographic of the western state of Iowa is like we're not winning awards because we're trying to be more inclusive and trying to focus on these efforts, right? It's not the popular thing. Waters went on to say that if he speaks out about every injustice as loudly as he can, the other side will run people against him to get him or others out of office. Especially when the state is already cutting funding or forcing entities to not have DEI, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion initiatives, that's where it's like I have to caution myself and tone a little bit about what I would want to speak out on down and choose my battles. Peggy Law told her fellow committee members Wednesday they have to put what's important in the community first. We can't stop just because of one person. I mean, Gebrekadon does put a lot together, but we still have to be stronger together, she said. In the fall of 2020, the City Council approved a resolution to establish the Inclusive Sioux City Advisory Committee, which provides guidance to the Council on matters relating to diversity, inclusion, and equity. The goal of the committee is to represent the interests of and enhance the quality of life for all who live in the city. The idea for the committee came out of meetings between city staff and Sioux City NAACP leadership in the wake of protests that erupted in May 2020 following the death of George Floyd, a black man who was killed by an ex-Minneapolis police officer. The talks were designed to explore how the city could begin moving forward. Gebrekadon worked in a variety of diversity, equity, and inclusion positions throughout her time in college. Before coming to work for the city of Sioux City, she was employed as an HIV case manager at Siouxland Community Health Center. In March 2023, Gebrekaden was honored during the 38th Annual Women of Excellence Awards Ceremony with the award for Women Striving to Improve the Quality of Life. Then, in November, Gebrekaden launched a campaign for a vacated Sioux City School Board seat. She ultimately lost the election to Dan Greenwell, who is currently serving the two-year term on the board. Sioux City Sky High Art, Skywalk Festival to unveil new community mural. Earl Horlick reports from Sioux City. The Skywalk Wall near the Sioux City Community School District's Career Academy is getting an artistic makeover. But does the large-scale mural represent interlocked peninsulas, a connected collection of body parts, or something else entirely? Jessica Hammond, aka Brutal Doodles, was playing it coy as she and her fellow artist Kitty Hart, aka Kitty Kitty Bang Bang, and Tracy Tuttle, aka Sweet TT Tart, mapped out the mural that will be completed by both students and community members. The final result will be unveiled at the third annual Gallery in the Skywalk Art Festival, taking place from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday throughout the 2-mile downtown Skywalk system. This free, family-friendly event is a celebration of art, music, food, drink, and community, according to Hammond, one of the founders. We envisioned the Skywalk Art Festival to be a springtime partner to our Alley Art Festival, which takes place in September, she said. However, this year's Skywalk Festival has been reimagined as a community-built event, sanctioned by the Community Built Association, or CBA. The CBA is a nationwide organization that empowers people to create positive, sustainable change in their communities. The CBA is all about creating public artwork, events, and infrastructure with an emphasis on community engagement and participation, Hammond said. So instead of presenting multiple murals created by several artists, Gallery in the Skywalk now has a board of 10 to 12 community members who are contributing ideas for one cohesive wall. Hammond also reached out to the school district, the arts center, and public library as event partners. As a result, this year's fest will include the new community mural, a student art show at the Career Academy, kid-friendly art projects as the arts center and the public library, open hours at Gallery 103, Three Rivers Gallery, Focus and Framed Gallery, and the Art Sioux Gallery, as well as dozens of local art vendors, free live music by Guitar RX, and drinks and snacks at Hardline Coffee. Hammond, a Sioux City native, is especially happy that the Gallery in the Skywalk Art Festival will bring more foot traffic to downtown's Skywalk system. She is also pleased that people share her vision when it comes to public art. Art should be all around us, in both public and private spaces, Hammond said. And now we turn to national and world news. Biden meets with leaders. The president says U.S. commitment ironclad in Indo-Pacific region. From Washington, President Joe Biden said U.S. defense commitment to Indo-Pacific allies was ironclad as he gathered Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida at the White House on Thursday in the midst of growing concern about provocative Chinese military actions. The U.S. and the Philippines have had a mutual treaty in place for more than 70 years. Biden's reinforcement of the American commitment comes amid skirmishes between the Philippine and Chinese coast guards in the disputed South China Sea. The United States' defense commitments to Japan and to the Philippines are ironclad. They're ironclad, Biden said as he began the three-way talks at the White House. As I said before, any attack on Philippine aircraft, vessels, or armed forces in the South China Sea would invoke our mutual defense treaty. The White House billed the first ever trilateral summit with Japan and the Philippines as a potent response to China's intimidation attempts and said it would send a message that China is the outlier in the neighborhood, an administration official said. The White House said Biden and Marcos during the talks underscored their commitment to international law in the South China Sea and reaffirmed their country's treaty obligations to defend each other. The leaders also announced joint patrols in the Indo-Pacific this year, a follow-up on law enforcement drills last year by the allies near the disputed sea. The summit came a day after Biden held one-on-one talks with Kishida and feted the Japanese premier with a glitzy state dinner, a diplomatic honor meant to recognize Tokyo's growing clout on the global stage. It was also designed as a signal that the Democratic administration remains determined to build a latticework of alliances in the Indo-Pacific amid Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Biden also hosted Marcos for a private meeting ahead of the scheduled three-way talks. Today's summit is an opportunity to define the future that we want and how we intend to achieve it together, Marcos said. The summit also had a large economic component, with several major U.S.-based companies announcing investments in the Philippines, administration officials said. The new deals came after Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo visited Manila last month to announce more than $1 billion in new investment by American companies in the Philippines. Court hears case on trans ban. Arkansas enacted the nation's first limits on gender-affirming care. From St. Louis, arguments before a federal appeals court that will consider whether to reinstate Arkansas's first-in-the-nation ban on gender-affirming care for minors focused Thursday on whether it and similar restrictions adopted by two dozen states discriminate on the basis of sex. 10 judges with the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis heard arguments over a judge's ruling last year that struck down the ban as unconstitutional. The 2021 law would prohibit doctors from providing gender-affirming hormone treatment, puberty blockers, or surgery to anyone under 18. An attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union, which challenged the law on behalf of four transgender youths and their parents, said the restriction infringes on the long-standing rights of parents to make decisions about their children's medical care. Arkansas believed that the government knew better than the loving parents in this case what was best for their minor children. Chase Strangio, Deputy Director for Transgender Justice for the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project, told the court. That burdens that long-standing right of parents to direct the medical care of their children. At least 24 states have adopted laws restricting or banning gender-affirming medical care for minors, and most of those face lawsuits. The restrictions on healthcare are part of a larger backlash against transgender rights, touching on everything from bathroom access to participation in sports. The 43-minute hearing on the Arkansas law drew a packed audience that included the actor Elliot Page, who filed a brief asking the court to uphold last year's ruling. Dylan Jacobs, the Deputy Solicitor General for Arkansas, argued that the law doesn't discriminate based on sex because it bans the treatments for a specific purpose. Minors may be prescribed testosterone for any purpose other than gender transition under this statute, Jacobs said. The full court, rather than a three-judge panel, heard the case after a request by Arkansas's Republican Attorney General Tim Griffin. The move could speed up the case's march toward the U.S. Supreme Court, which was asked to block similar laws in Kentucky and Tennessee. It's unclear when the Eighth Circuit will make a ruling. Chief Judge Stephen Colleton said it will issue a decision in due course. Attack destroys large Ukrainian power plant. Parliament passes law that will govern drafting of new troops. A massive missile and drone attack destroyed one of Ukraine's largest power plants and damaged others, officials said Thursday, part of a renewed Russian campaign targeting energy infrastructure. The Tropilska plant, which was the biggest energy supplier for the Kyiv, Cherkasy, and Zhytomyr regions, was struck numerous times, destroying the transformer, turbines, and generators, and leaving the plant ablaze. As the first drone approached, workers hid in a shelter, saving their lives, said Andriy Hota, director of the state company that runs the plant, Centrenergo. The plant supplied electricity to 3 million customers, but none lost power because the grid was able to compensate since demands are low at this time of year. At least 10 other strikes overnight damaged energy infrastructure in Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. Meanwhile, Ukraine's parliament passed a controversial law Thursday that will govern how the country calls up new soldiers at a time when it needs to replenish depleted forces who are increasingly struggling to fend off Russia's advance. Railroads ask courts to throw out safety rule. Federal authorities require two-person crew on freight trains. Four railroads asked federal appeals courts this week to throw out a new rule that would require two-person train crews in most circumstances, saying the mandate is arbitrary, capricious, and an illegal abuse of discretion. The identical challenges of the Federal Railroad Administration's rule were all filed this week in different appellate courts on behalf of Union Pacific, BNSF, and two shortline railroads. The new federal requirement announced last week was a milestone in organized labor's long fight to preserve the practice and came amid increasing scrutiny into railroad safety. The industry has long opposed such a regulation, and the Association of American Railroads trade group says the rule was unfounded and not supported by safety data. Union Pacific said in a statement, "This rule, which lacks any data showing two people in a cab are safer than one, and hinders our ability to compete." The Omaha, Nebraska-based railroad earned $1.65 billion, or $2.71 per share, in the fourth quarter last year. BNSF deferred comment to AAR, and the two smaller railroads didn't immediately respond to messages Thursday. Georgia Lieutenant Governor probed over election. From Atlanta, a special prosecutor was assigned to look into whether Georgia Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones should face criminal charges over efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election in the state. The Prosecuting Attorney's Council of Georgia announced Thursday that its executive director, Pete Skandalakis, will handle the matter. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis was barred from prosecuting Jones as part of her election interference case against former President Donald Trump and others because Willis had hosted a fundraiser for Jones's Democratic opponent in the lieutenant governor's race. Jones was among 16 state Republicans who signed a certificate stating that Trump won Georgia and declaring themselves the state's electors, even though Democrat Joe Biden won in the state. After the election, Jones sought a special session of the legislature aimed at overturning Biden's win in the state. Once again, you are listening to this reading of the Sioux City Journal for Friday, April 12th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we continue with a few more national and world news stories. Menendez and his wife will face separate trials. From New York, U.S. Senator Bob Menendez and his wife will be tried separately on allegations they participated in a bribery scheme. A federal judge ruled Thursday after Nadine Menendez's lawyers argued she requires treatment for a serious medical condition. The New Jersey Democrats' trial will remain scheduled for May 6th in Manhattan Federal Court, while Nadine Menendez's trial was tentatively pushed back to July 8th. Her lawyers argued for the move this week, saying she was diagnosed with an unspecified condition and will need surgery in coming weeks. In court Thursday, they said she needs more time to undergo medical tests. A lawyer for the senator urged the judge not to hold up his client's day in court. Prosecutors argued separate trials would result in serious inefficiencies and unfairness that would require dozens of witnesses to be recalled. Brawl. A fight broke out in a New Orleans courtroom Thursday when Joseph Washington pleaded guilty to murdering his three children in an arson house fire last year. A woman related to the children attacked him, and other relatives joined in before deputies restored order. One arrest was reported. Embassy raid. Mexico's president said Thursday his country wants the United Nations to suspend Ecuador from the world body as part of a complaint to the top UN court over Ecuador's police raid last week on the Mexican embassy in Quito. Aid. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, is negotiating with the White House to advance aid for Ukraine and Israel in a deal that would deviate from a $95 billion Senate package and include several GOP demands. House Republican leader Steve Scalise, a Republican from Louisiana, said Thursday. Grants. The Biden administration awarded $830 million in grants Thursday to fund 80 projects to toughen aging U.S. infrastructure against the impacts of climate change. Oil. In a move environmentalists called a betrayal, the Biden administration approved construction of a deepwater oil export terminal this week off the Texas coast that would be the largest of its kind in the U.S. And finally, immigration. Authorities in the Dominican Republic said Thursday they launched an investigation after an immigration officer was accused of raping a 14-year-old girl. And now these stories in sports. A Masters clinic on display. DeChambeau grabs lead over Scheffler before play suspended. Doug Ferguson reports from Augusta, Georgia. Bryson DeChambeau was the mad scientist who calculated barometric pressure and the decay of spin rate in altitude when trying to figure out how to best play the game. Then he became the incredible bulk, adding 40 pounds of muscle and mass with a diet of some 3,500 calories a day in an effort to swing the club faster and hit the ball farther than anyone. The third iteration he showed at the Masters on Thursday might be the most daunting. The golf phase, DeChambeau said Thursday, after opening with a 7 under 65, his best start in a major and lowest score at the Masters, trying to be the best golfer I can be. DeChambeau was plenty good in a relentless wind, taking a one-shot lead over Scottie Scheffler in the rain-delayed opening round. Scheffler hasn't changed at all. The world's number one player was practically flawless from tee to green. The first round could not be completed because of a 2.5-hour delay from overnight rain that drenched Augusta National, leaving the greens softer than they have been all week. The test came from a steady 20-mile-per-hour wind with gusts twice that strong. Among those still on the course was Tiger Woods, who was 1 under par through 13 holes when it was too dark to continue. He next faces 23 holes Friday, an endurance test for his battered legs as he tries to set the Masters record by making his 24th consecutive cut. Nikolaj Højgaard of Denmark, one of 17 newcomers to the Masters, was at 5 under with 3 holes to play. Max Homa was at 4 under through 13 holes. DeChambeau put on a clinic of power and putting, always a good recipe at Augusta National. I'm just in a place where I'm repeating a motion, trying to do the same thing over and over again, he said. He ran off 5 birdies in a 6-hole stretch on the back 9, including a 2-putt birdie on the par 5 15th when his risky shot under a pine tree cleared the water fronting the green and left him 40 feet away. Scheffler teed off about 2 hours later when the wind was at full force, and part of him was surprised to see so many red numbers under par on the large white boards. I've played this tournament once before in some pretty high winds, and it's an extremely challenging golf course, Scheffler said, giving credit to caddy Ted Scott for guessing the wind correctly on a number of shots. He had the only bogey-free round of the 89 players in the field. No small task on a day like this. Three of his six birdies came on the par threes, one of those when he holed a bunker shot from behind the 12th green. DeChambeau feels he got fortunate with his shot that grazed the tree. There was no doubting the break Scheffler got with his second shot on the par 5 13th when he flinched upon hearing a shot hit from another fairway. Scheffler's ball came up short, and he assumed it would roll back into the tributary of Ray's Creek that winds in front of the green. The turf was soft enough that it stayed up, and he chipped it close to make birdie. "I've never seen a ball stay up there," Scheffler said. "I don't know if that will happen again this week. I'm hoping I don't find out." Scheffler began as the 4-1 favorite, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, the shortest odds since Tiger Woods nearly two decades ago. And then the number one player in the world, who came into the Masters off two wins and a runner-up finish, played as expected. It was his ninth bogey-free round of the year. In Major League Baseball news, Stewart shines in Mets road route. From Atlanta, DJ Stewart hit a two-run homer in New York's four-run third inning, and pinch hitter Tyrone Taylor hit a ninth-inning grand slam to cap the rout as the Mets beat the Atlanta Braves 16-4 on Thursday. Jose Quintana gave up three runs in 5 1/3 innings. Jeff McNeil drove in three runs with two hits in the best game of the season for the Mets' bats. New York set season highs for runs and hits with 16 each. Stewart's homer, which gave the Mets a 7-0 lead, was his second of the series. The designated hitter had no hits this season before hitting a two-run homer in the Mets' 8-7 win in the series opener on Monday. Royals 13, Astros 3. Bobby Witt Jr. had four hits, including two home runs and five RBIs, as host Kansas City used a 9-run first inning to defeat Houston, completing a 3-game sweep and extending its winning streak to 7 games. Vinny Pascantino, who came into Wednesday's game hitting 108 with no RBIs, was 3-for-5 with 3 RBIs and now is hitting 222 with 8 RBIs. The Royals sent 15 men to the plate in the first inning, tying a club record with 11 hits in the inning. A's 1, Rangers nothing. J.P. Sears carried a no-hitter into the 7th inning and combined with 3 relievers on a one-hitter. Seth Brown homered to supply the game's only run, and Oakland won at Texas. Sears allowed leadoff walks in the 1st, 2nd, and 5th innings before Adolis Garcia ended the no-hit bid by lining a one-out single to left field. Phillies 5, Pirates 1. Ranger Suarez struck out 8 over 6 shutout innings, and Brandon Marsh and Bryson Stott hit 2-run homers in the 7th in Philadelphia's home victory over Pittsburgh. Alec Bohm also went deep for the Phillies. Orioles 9, Red Sox 4 in 10 innings. Left fielder Colton Cowser hit his first two career home runs, and Gunnar Henderson launched a 2-run home run to begin Baltimore's 6-run 10th inning as the visiting Orioles finished off a 3-game sweep in Boston. The Red Sox let a 2-1 lead slip away in the 8th inning, and despite a late game-tying pinch-hit homer by Connor Wong, have dropped 4-5. In other baseball news, ex-Ohtani interpreter charged from Los Angeles. Federal authorities charged the former longtime interpreter for Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani on Thursday with federal bank fraud, alleging he stole more than $16 million from the Japanese sensation to cover gambling bets and debts. Interpreter Ippei Mizuhara, a constant presence beside Ohtani in baseball stadiums across the country since 2018, abused the two-way player's trust in him and exploited the language barrier to plunder a bank account that only he could access, prosecutors said. U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada said Mizuhara was so intertwined in Ohtani's life and career that he became the star's de facto manager. The role enabled him to withdraw money from the account, at times lying and impersonating Ohtani to bank employees to finance his insatiable appetite for illegal sports betting. Estrada said there is no evidence that Ohtani was aware of the interpreter's actions. Mizuhara faces up to 30 years in federal prison if he's convicted of a single count of bank fraud. Rainouts. Thursday's scheduled game between the Minnesota Twins and Detroit Tigers was rained out and will be made up as part of a Saturday doubleheader. The finale of the Reds-Brewers series in Cincinnati was postponed. The game will be made up as the first game of a split doubleheader on August 30th. Trade. Baltimore acquired right-handed reliever Yohan Ramirez from the New York Mets for cash. The 28-year-old Ramirez was 0-1 with a 11.81 ERA in three appearances this season for New York. And the Major League Baseball stat of the day, 2100. Bruce Bochy became the 10th manager to win at least 2100 games in his career after Texas' 6-2 victory over the Oakland A's on Wednesday night. In NBA news, Knicks keep up push for number 2 seed, roll by Celtics. From Boston. Jalen Brunson scored 39 points in three quarters, and the New York Knicks kept up their quest to finish with the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference by beating the Boston Celtics 118-109 on Thursday night. One day after clinching a playoff spot, the Knicks pulled within a game of the Milwaukee Bucks for second, with each team having two games remaining. New York would have to win both and have the Bucks lose their games at Oklahoma City and Orlando because Milwaukee has the head-to-head tiebreaker. Brunson shot 15 of 23 from the field and 6 of 11 from three-point range. Backcourt mate Dante DiVincenzo had 17 points, and Josh Hart finished with 16. New York also received a lift off the bench from its primary acquisition at the trade deadline, as Bojan Bogdanovic had 14 points. Jason Tatum scored 18 points for Boston. Peyton Pritchard had 16 points off the bench, and Jaylen Brown and Sam Hauser each had 15. Despite having already clinched home court advantage throughout the playoffs, the Celtics took the court with their top 8 players. With the Knicks up 29, Boston coach Joe Mazzulla opened the fourth quarter with a unit entirely of reserves. Brunson's night was also done with one quarter to spare as New York denied Boston's bid of a season sweep of its Atlantic Division rival. Bulls 127, Pistons 105. DeMar DeRozan scored 39 points, and Chicago sent host Detroit to a franchise-record 67th loss of the season. Detroit broke the franchise mark set by the 1979-80 team, while Chicago moved closer to wrapping up home court advantage in the Eastern Conference play in-game against Atlanta. Nikola Vucevic had 27 points and 11 rebounds for Chicago, and Kobe White had 18 points. Jalen Duren had 20 points and 11 rebounds for Detroit, and Marcus Sasser scored 20 points. Jazz 124, Rockets 121. Luka Samanic scored a season-high 22 points to help host Utah snap a 13-game losing streak by beating Houston. Keontae George chipped in 20 points for the Jazz, who finished 21-20 at home this season. Bryce Sensabaugh added 17 points, and Talen Horton-Tucker had 16. Fred VanVleet knocked down 9 three-pointers and scored a season-high 42 points for the Rockets, who lost for the sixth time in 7 games. In other NBA news, Holiday envisioned extension after trade. From Boston, the Celtics always hoped to keep Drew Holiday on their roster beyond this season. It didn't take Holiday long to view Boston as a franchise he wanted to play for on a long-term basis. A day after he agreed to a 4-year, $135 million extension to remain with the Celtics, Holliday said Thursday it was an early weight off his shoulders as he prepares for a playoff run that the former Bucks All-Star hopes it will end with his second NBA championship ring. "Once I knew I was getting traded here, this is a part of what I wanted or what I envisioned," Holliday told reporters Thursday. "Being in a great organization, being here for a lengthy amount of time, and being able to play alongside people like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and really try to get more banners and get more rings." The new extension will include Holliday foregoing the $37.5 million player option he had for next season. Hawks lose two for play-in tournament from Atlanta. The Atlanta Hawks will be without forward Jalen Johnson and center Onyeka Okongwu in the Eastern Conference play-in tournament because of injuries. The Hawks announced Thursday that Johnson, one of the team's most productive starters with his averages of 16.0 points and 8.7 rebounds, will miss at least 3 weeks after spraining his right ankle on Thursday night against Miami. Okongwu will miss at least 4 weeks following a non-surgical procedure on Tuesday to address inflammation in his left big toe. Okongwu averaged 10.2 points and 6.8 rebounds. And the NBA stat of the day, Stephen Curry and the Warriors emerged from Thursday's game against the Trailblazers with 45 victories, guaranteeing that at least two, or as many as four, 45-win teams would miss the playoffs. The last time two 45-win teams missed the playoffs was 1972. And in NHL news, Penguins boost playoff chances. From Pittsburgh, Erik Karlsson scored 1 minute and 40 seconds into overtime as the Pittsburgh Penguins bolstered their playoff odds with a 6-5 win over Detroit on Thursday night. Sidney Crosby set up Carlson's winner to become the 14th player in NHL history to reach 1,000 career assists. Crosby finished with a goal and two assists to move past Hall of Famer Phil Esposito and into 10th on the NHL's all-time scoring list. Panthers 4, Blue Jackets nothing. Sergei Bobrovsky made 25 saves to tie for the NHL lead with 6 shutouts. Sam Reinhart scored his 54th goal, and Florida won at home. Bobrovsky, who has 44 career shutouts, is tied with Arizona's Connor Ingram and Pittsburgh's Tristan Jarry for the most this season. Flyers 4, Rangers 1. Bobby Brink scored the go-ahead goal early in the second period. Samuel Ersson made 24 saves, and visiting Philadelphia snapped an 8-game losing streak. Cam York, Travis Konersny, and Noah Cates also scored for the Flyers, who were 0-6-2 since defeating Boston at home on March 23rd. Ryan Poling added 2 assists as Philadelphia stayed alive in the tight Eastern Conference playoff race. Sabres 4, Capitals 2. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen stopped 22 shots, and Buffalo played the role of playoff spoiler by beating Washington. Alex Tuch, Jack Quinn, and Dylan Cousins, with an empty netter, scored for the Sabres, who played their last home game of the season 2 days after they extended their NHL record playoff drought to a 13th season. Islanders 3, Canadiens 2 in overtime. Kyle Palmieri scored at 1 minute 17 seconds of overtime as host New York extended its winning streak to 6 games. Devils 6, Maple Leafs 5. Jesper Bratt broke a tie with 1 minute 14 left with his second goal of the game as visiting New Jersey overcame Toronto star Austin Matthews' NHL-leading 67th and 68th goals of the season. Senators 3, Lightning 2 in second overtime. Brady Tkachuk had a goal and an assist in regulation and scored the only goal of the shootout as Ottawa won at Tampa Bay. Jets 3, Stars nothing. Laurent Brossoit stopped 24 shots for his third shutout. David Gustafsson scored on his 24th birthday, and Winnipeg won at Dallas. In other NHL news, Hennepin inks 8-year extension with VGK. From Las Vegas, Noah Hennepin, a trade deadline acquisition meant to bolster the Golden Knights' blue line, signed an 8-year extension with Vegas on Thursday, worth an average of $7.35 million annually. Hennepin, 27, has 2 goals and 7 assists in 16 games for the Knights. He was acquired from the Flames on March 6th and between Calgary and Vegas has 44 points in 77 games, just 4 points off his career high 2 years ago. Just as important, Hennepin has made the smooth transition by immediately being replaced on the Knights' first defensive pairing. The play of all three pairings was a major reason the Knights won the Stanley Cup last year, but injuries, illness, and inconsistent play has created more uncertainty this season. By signing Hennepin to an extension, it could be a signal the Knights might move on from one or two of their veteran defensemen after this season because of salary cap restraints. Blackhawks. Chicago defenseman Ethan Del Mastro was recalled from Rockford of the AHL. The 21-year-old Del Mastro was selected by Chicago in the 4th round of the 2021 NHL Draft. Ducks. Anaheim forward Jacob Silfverberg said he will retire at the end of the regular season. And the NHL stat of the day, 82. On this date in 1960, Maurice Richard scored his NHL record 82nd and final playoff goal in the Montreal Canadiens' 5-2 victory against the Maple Leafs in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. Richard retired before the 1960-61 season. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal on Friday, April 12th. I'm your reader, Mark Bedford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks for listening.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The The authors described the increased risk as modest, but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now, researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.